We're going to talk about something in this podcast, podcast 853, that I have really been troubled by the last few days, and that I have actually been struggling with. And this is involves something for content creators in the current time frame, but it also involves something that I'm going to call involuntary intoxication. And we're going to talk about that in podcast 853, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Somebody told me the other day that we are absolutely halfway through. Let me move my headphone cable here because it makes lots of noise. We're actually halfway between the beginning of summer, or the summer solstice, and the fall equinox. Right now, in August, we are halfway through that. So before you know it, you're going to be experiencing this weather change. And one of the things that happens at this midpoint is the leaves start to look different, the sky starts to look different, the temperatures might change, the humidity might change. These are all indicators that summer is coming to an end if you live in the upper Midwest, where we do have pretty intense winters. And so you're going to want to think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because you might want to have them prepared to do a heating check to make sure everything is running right. I had problems with my heat last winter. I've had three different times when the furnace had to be repaired in the last 2 years. And I think if Ryan was to conduct a heating check, they might be able to identify stuff before the fact. Also, when you have plumbing problems, you want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They've been in Frogtown in St. Paul for four generations. What do? Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Don't forget the heating checks. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, if you're looking to get the Bob Davis Podcast, you can get it right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com by listening to the stream or clicking on the podcast and then clicking on play. It will open up in your player or on your desktop, whatever. You can also get the Bob Davis Podcast at iTunes. You can subscribe off of iTunes. Tune In, which works with Alexa. Google Play Music, which works with the Google voice device. Stitcher.com. Spotify, which is great for Android devices. And lots of other places like Blog Talk Radio. Keep listening for more information. And again, thanks for your donations to Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. As I said, this is something, the word is vex. It is vexing to me. It is something that I have been struggling with and troubled by for a few days, and it involves content creation. And I think if you're a content creator, this is probably going to be a good podcast to listen to, because I've been doing podcasts for quite a while. We're coming up on 1,000 podcasts and another 100 or so podcasts. So, you know, I've done an awful lot of podcasts, and I'm kind of an authority on how to do them and what to do. And as a content creator, I am struggling with one of the main things that I've talked about for a long time. I mean, I'm listed as a politics and society podcast, and I am struggling, having a lot of trouble talking about politics and figuring out what I want to talk about. And I need to talk about this. And I don't know if this podcast is going to hit it on the head, or if I'm going to have to do a few more along these lines. But if I do, then I will, because I've got to get this bile out of my system. And some of this conversation is based on some discussions with friends recently, but a lot of it's based on interactions in social media that made me think of the talk radio days when I had to read 250 pages of news content a day. I worked in the realm of news. We in talk radio, and if you're live on TV, you work in the realm of quote-unquote news, which is things happening that people are reporting on and reacting to. And we thought, and I think we did have to, we thought we had to, and I think we did have to be up on the latest dispatches, let's say. Even after talk radio, I continued to prep for podcasts that way until one day I thought to myself, this feels like BS. And what would happen if I didn't do this? And so the news cleanse was born. And this was before people started doing news cleanses. This is the idea of spending 2 weeks or a week and not reading the news at all, and doing a lot of yoga and talking about stuff that came up. And it was very freeing, and it was great because it made me realize that I can create content without news events. And I mean, I knew that anyway, but I didn't know how to do it. So getting it to the point where I knew how to do it just opened up a whole new way of doing things for me. And I did it a couple times, and then I just stopped prepping for podcasts the way that I prep for talk radio. Obviously, podcasts are different. They last longer. People can go back and listen to them years later, and they really should be able to be something that has current reference even to 5, 10 years later. And the main reason for this in terms of podcasting is that two things have changed. First of all, I didn't need to do that kind of prep anymore. The guy from Coon Rapids was not going to call and ask me something that I didn't know about because I didn't read the newspaper. So I didn't need to do that. But the other thing is, and I think this is also true for broadcast of any kind of broadcast, radio, television, that there is, the velocity of information has changed. So it's 2019 at the time I'm doing this podcast. The last 10 years or more have seen some significant change in terms of media that has high velocity, moves very quickly, gets reaction very quickly, gets comment very quickly. Social media, basically, but other news sources that aren't part of what used to be considered a realm of objectivity, or at least objective sources of gathered information. So big websites like the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal. What's happened is that we've now digitized all that, and so a Breitbart or InfoWars or a Drudge has the same impact as the New York Times. And yeah, I realize the Drudge Report is just nothing more than a jump site for all these other things, and that the New York Times and Washington Post articles can be, you know, linked on Drudge. But Drudge is what people look at, and oftentimes they don't even link. And it doesn't bother me because I love Drudge. But social media is really where we're focusing on, because I think social media has really contributed to this velocity question. Specifically, Twitter and Facebook have increased the velocity of information. They can make something happen. They can provoke a reaction that is akin to the fog of war. This is what happens in battle, especially. It can happen anywhere in battle, but it certainly happens at command levels, high command levels, where there is a great deal of confusion due to the chaos in battle, where information comes in so quickly, often the wrong information, that commanders just can't make decisions or don't make the right decisions, or the decisions they make are obviated by conditions at on the front. So they'll issue an order and the conditions have changed at that point, on the front. And so what happens is control and decision making devolves to the unit level. In the United States, non-coms and junior officers have enough autonomy to address those kinds of situations within reason. And in the end, in the fog of war, sometimes goals are met, sometimes battles are lost, and sometimes battles are won. So that's an example of one of the things that I think is an effect of this very high velocity information that we're getting. Another one is, one might say, post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is defined as a psychiatric disorder that can occur in people who have experienced or witnessed a traumatic event such as a natural disaster, a serious accident, a terrorist act, war, combat, or other kinds of violent personal assaults like rape or a beating, things of that nature. I might humbly suggest that we can apply the concept of PTSD to a certain degree to almost all society today. Part of it is we've had some pretty intense things happen in the last 30 years, but the other part of it is that we're bombarded with information all day long. Almost all information is designed to tell you what happened. Usually it's wrong at first blush, but it's also designed to tell you what everything means and what you're now supposed to think about this new information, and what, and furthermore, what will now happen as the result of this information. If it's bad information or if all the facts aren't known, then predictions are wrong. So this is what happens. Perceptions can be set that cannot be unset in the fog of war. And people find out in the end that they don't know what to believe after the storm passes. So we're all vulnerable to all kinds of superstitions and beliefs especially conspiracy theories, which are theories about things that have no proof but sound good, religious belief structures, let's not underestimate those, as well as social belief structures, the people we hang out with, the people we went to high school with, the people we went to college with, the people in our business, the people we work with, our neighbors, things like that. So talking about what we now call politics can be stressful and vexing and depressing because, now this is my definition, so I realize people might not like this, but because most of the time what we're talking about isn't politics. To me, politics is discussing the nuts and bolts of elections, so candidates, vote totals, election preparation, and so forth. People who are involved in politics talk about those things, and they'll talk about issues in relation to those things. What we are doing in the national discourse is not talking about politics. We are fighting for a lifestyle or culture or a lifestyle or cultural point of view. I don't consider that politics. And this is why our national discussion has become poisoned and really sick. Now, some people will tell you that it's not any different now than it ever was, that it just seems worse because of social media, and I disagree. We're being asked to make instant conclusions on faulty information on a day-to-day, almost hour-by-hour basis. We're asked to form immediate perceptions on limited facts almost all the time, just as the social media feed goes by, or the news feed goes by, or the Twitter feed goes by. Things are said, you react positively or negative, you have an emotional reaction, and then you form a perception and a judgment. So we're asked to take limited facts and opinion and form judgments and perceptions and take action based on those things on an almost hourly basis by social media. And another way to explain it is to compare Twitter, let's say, to In Cold Blood, the novel about the murders in Kansas by Truman Capote, which ended up being years in the making, and the fact-checking and gathering in that book were meticulous. And as a result, we got literature out of it. If you don't want to talk about literature, take a series like Anatomy of a Murder, which involved a murder of a woman in Wisconsin. And you have to take a group of details considered in context with the defense and a group of details considered in context with the prosecution to decide whether or not you think this individual is guilty. And it's 13 or 14 or 15 or 16 shows and two seasons before you begin to have some context. Here's the problem. We don't have time for context in this society. This happens and it means this. So what happens is we tend to fall back on our social connections and the things we grew up with and the ideas we grew up with and the things that we believe outside these pieces of information, the things that we identify with in our experience. When you interact with people on that basis, you're not having a national discussion. You're in the middle of a schoolyard and you're 8 years old and somebody's telling you what you're going to do and how you're going to act. This is now how we choose our leaders. This is now how we are expected to make the government function and how we are expected to contribute as citizens to decisions that have consequences, despite the legal constrictions or constitutional restrictions on people who hold office. So quite literally, we do have a situation where the mob demands one thing today. If politicians react to it, they'll just demand something else tomorrow. And so we are constantly reacting to the mob that's making noise on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. Now, as a content creator, I have virtually no interest in that discussion. I don't want to interact on social media. In fact, I may just turn my comments off because of this. I end up having to spend a lot of time curating content and deleting posts and responding to others and deleting yet other posts when the back and forth has exceeded the point where the person posting has anything to say that has anything to do with the original post, didn't listen to the content, didn't read the content, and their stuff just has to be taken down. And I reserve the right to do that. Now, I could create content every day from the headlines. I could go back to reading 250 pages of information and telling you where this guy's wrong and that guy's wrong and that's what this means and everything else. But what I've learned is that information that you pull from the internet, whether it's the Washington Post or some weird website, is often wrong, and that the facts are not checked and that they are not vetted and they're telling you things that they don't even know. In fact, it did happen during the Korean War where reporters reported literally false things about the strategic retreats of the 1st Marines in the Chosin, and was it the 1st Marines? Might have been the 4th, but it was Chesty Puller, and the 8th Army as well. So they just made it up. They made up this route, and it was not a route. There were places where routes occurred, but in general, the retreat in 1950, wasn't quote unquote a route. But the whole United States now has this impression that at that time we retreated pell mell and threw our guns down and ran. So it doesn't serve anything to create that kind of content from headlines that are like that. The greater impact, the greater question has to do with our society, and that takes time. And I wouldn't even interpret some of these podcasts in relation to real time. In fact, they are much more far-reaching than real time in scope by design, because they have to live for a long time. Whether it's the debt podcast, the prepping podcast that I did, travel podcasts that I do, or even covering things like the pipeline protest or Sturgis or air shows. I think we are suffering from something called involuntary intoxication. When I say we, I mean most of society. And it's a stretch, and I'm stretching this definition, and I know that, but we're going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast. So one of the things that there's an awful lot of information about these days is tariffs and trade protection and the effects of tariffs. And so with all the talk about foreign manufacturing with the new president, and I shouldn't say new because he's now going to be running for a second term, companies really are trying to figure out how to handle their manufacturing, whether to leave it overseas or bring portions of it back to the U.S. If you're looking for a great American manufacturing company that does design, engineering, and manufacturing, check out Depot Star. You can click on the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com to go to their website, or you can check them out online at depotstar.com. So what do you mean, Bob Davis, by all this nonsense about involuntary intoxication? Well, involuntary intoxication, there's two definitions. The first one is basically date rape drugs, when somebody is tricked into consuming a substance and bad things happen. The second one is actually very, very interesting. Involuntary intoxication may also occur as the result of an allergy to or the unintended effects of a legal prescription medication. So I am stretching the definition a little bit, but I think it can apply to society as a whole. Is it possible the degree of intensity and the amount and the velocity of information coming from all quadrants, cable TV news, social media, talk radio, but especially social media feeds like Facebook, Twitter, and to a lesser or greater extent, YouTube, is it possible that they're actually having the same effect as intoxicants up to and including antidepressants like Celexa, Prozac, Xanax, and so forth? And just as an aside, by 2016, it's reported that as much as 1/6 of Americans are on some form of antidepressant. That doesn't mean also stimulants and other kinds of substances that people are consuming illegally, like oxycodone and so forth. And in a small percentage of cases with antidepressants, involuntary intoxication can result, okay? Now, there are a few studies on how social media makes us feel. We do know that social media sites like Facebook and Twitter are designed to feel as though we're going to miss something if we don't keep scrolling. So we feel better when we're constantly checking our Facebook feed. We feel better when we're talking to people through messaging. We feel better when we're constantly checking Twitter feeds and YouTube and things like that. In addition to this, the phones and other devices are designed to be highly responsive so that scanning, scrolling, clicking, and viewing is easier. I think it's low latency where it just kind of is fluid. And, you know, we love these tools. We love how they work. They do provide a certain level of service to society, but they also provide a tremendous amount of information to data and content providers. So what's the effect of using services like Facebook and Twitter and even to a certain degree LinkedIn or YouTube when you are constantly being given the stimulus that stimulates you the most? Could you be, I be, we be, in some form of involuntary intoxication, where we aren't even aware of the side effects of this very real drug called social media that comes through the telephone that everybody uses, whether you're in a yoga class and the girl in front of you is checking her messages, or whether you're on the highway and people, despite the new laws about you can't do that, people are on their cell phones messaging or commenting on Facebook or whatever. I have said many times that you get away from the constant push of information, whether your phone goes down or you forget your phone or something like that, or you travel and you can't check your feed as much, you see a completely different country. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Nashville or Chicago or Great Falls, Montana, you start to see Americans in a different light than how we are portrayed in some way, shape, or form on social media and in the media, and how we react to whatever stimulus about those people we see changes when we don't see the stimulus constantly. In terms of context, we don't study history anymore. People don't know history, and especially timelines. They really struggle with when the Civil War occurred, or when World War I occurred, or World War II, or, you know, when Woodrow Wilson was president, or who Woodrow Wilson was. We only know the most recent things because our minds are full of what somebody said in social media about our sister or that guy that did that thing, and what I said to him and what he said to me, and so forth and so on. We don't study any other intellectual disciplines for the most part, unless we are educated. So things like art, architecture, literature, ancient history, things like that are something that we watch on television. We don't read books about those things because that's too hard. Even crime, people don't read books about crime. They watch shows about crime. They listen to podcasts about crime. They listen to audiobooks about crime. Not the same effect. Reading a book is not the same as an audiobook. If you have a high school education and you got it sometime in the last 20 years, unless you have devoted, so if you have just a high school education, and I do, but unless you have devoted a sizable amount of time to educating yourself, which I have, you are functionally illiterate, which means you're deeply susceptible to manipulations. And in fact, there's a lot of people who have college degrees who are subject to these kinds of manipulations, and even when they're not intended. I'm not saying there's a dark force that's doing this. I'm saying even when the manipulations are not intended, it's involuntary. And if we are intoxicated by this, then we're involuntary. Think back to the first time that you used the internet for news. You were like, I know what I felt. I was like, this is great. I can get all kinds of information. This is fantastic. And I felt like I was on some kind of drug, and I couldn't wait to get home to get back online to look something up, to use the internets to find things out. And that's kind of what's happening, except now it's happening really fast every day. So if somebody posts a post, you can look up the facts about the post that, you know, sometimes I find it hard to remember somebody's name. And I think it's because my head is so full of this stuff because I have to. My excuse is I have to do it for work, but I'm not sure that I have to do it for work. I think there's other things that I could be doing that are better for my work than that. But anyway, I think it is to a certain degree a form of involuntary intoxication. In fact, I would be surprised if that term doesn't come up in defense of someone who you know, did something after being sort of spurred to do it through social media. So then you have this use of social media in addition to whatever stimulants, depressants, or literal drugs you may have to take or want to take, whether they're legal or illegal. And I've often said that, you know, we can talk all we want about illegal drugs, but the fact is that the most dangerous drugs are alcohol, which is legal, and the drugs that you're prescribed for your compulsive eating problem or whatever. Those are the granddaddies of powerful drugs. My problem is this, and this is what I'm struggling with. You know, my problem, let me take a sip of coffee because this is where I want to slow down a little bit. you know, my problem is that doing a lot of yoga. So here's the thing. If you have a daily yoga practice, if you do a daily religious practice, any kind of a spiritual practice, even if it's, you know, karate or something like that, a martial art, you know, what happens when you're doing yoga, and it's because of the breath. You're breathing, and the breathing, and this is the same, I think, also in martial arts. One of the first things you're taught is how to breathe. And so when you breathe a certain way, it puts you in a more blissful state. And if you practice a lot of yoga, you're struggling constantly. The New Age people call this ascension. This is when you start to generate the kundalini, which lives in your gonads, and the kundalini starts to, you know, build through the chakras, from the root chakra, which is your survival instinct, to your sacral chakra, which is a little bit, more your sexual instinct and where you create from, up to your, your heart and your throat and your third eye, and then your crown. If you don't believe in that, then it's actually very similar with religious practices as well. You're swimming in a river of a different kind of energy. And when you do what I do, you get that energetic, fabulous, blissful feeling from practicing yoga. And again, I'm double dipping. So a lot of times I'm doing it twice a day. You have to come back. I'll speak for myself. I have to come back and, you know, dip back into this cesspool that we call current events, which we call politics, which is just a bunch of angry people repeating things someone else said who is also angry, and not being able to have a discussion about something unless you agree with their point of view, and not being able to address someone else's arguments, regardless of what they are. It's similar to a religious practice where, you know, if you're a monk and you're up in some hill in Spain, you don't have to really deal with humanity, at its lowest form, because you're praying all the time. That's what I feel like when I do yoga, and then I come back and I have to get back into this current events river, which is filled with lower vibrations. Even my friends who do politics are operating at a very much lower vibrational level. And I know, because I used to operate in that level. And I used to struggle with that when I did talk radio. Every day I had to come in and change my vibration to deal with the anger and frustration and nastiness that would happen when Joe from, you know, some part of town would call the president Obammy, or, you know, tell you were an idiot, or you'd tell them an idiot, because it was air combat, basically. It's a lower vibration. So I don't miss that at all. In fact, when I do talk radio now, I just tell people I'm not going to take calls. I'm not interested in what you have to say. I worry about the effect of the whole population swimming in this river due to this involuntary use of social media and this involuntary use of constantly being informed about things that take time to get the full facts. For example, they'll release GDP numbers once every quarter. And the thing is, GDP numbers are revised three times. So it takes almost a year and a half to really get a full understanding of what was happening a year and a half ago. Same with budgeting. So the president issues a budget that starts the budgeting process. Congress piddles with it and pieces it out and then votes on it, and Senate votes on it, and they change a few things, and that goes back to the president, and he either vetoes it or signs it. Then it goes to the individual agencies that are going to get the funding. And then at the end of the day, which is a year later, we know what was spent and what was taken in. So all these reports on the budget this and the budget that, they're actually talking about a budget proposal, and you don't have anything to do with it at that point. You know, you can certainly call your congressman and say, we shouldn't be spending money on this, but at that point, it's in the hands of Congress. It's going to go back to the president. He or she's going to sign it. That's the end of it. But it's not the end of it, because then it's a question of what was spent. So we're making judgments about things that we don't have complete information about, that change 6 months, 5 months, the next day, and we're expected to make judgments about society based on this literal fog of war. And that is something only soldiers have experienced in the past, not the general population. So what does a content creator do? And I think we have to think. So yes, you can certainly do your YouTube channel on the day-to-day events, and you can jump in the stream and you can say, you know, the deep state is trying to get the president, or, you know, Trump is a horrible person and he destroyed Hillary Clinton, and it's because the Russians wanted him to be president and all this stuff. And you can do that on a day-to-day basis and have yourself a great old time and get 130,000 subscribers and whoop-de-doo. But if you have to think about it and think about what you're doing, the question is, are you advancing the story? Not fighting about it, not taking a point of view about it, but basically helping people who are listening to your podcast or watching your YouTube channels figure out how to curate their own feeds and their own content and their own judgments, because no one is doing that. And that's what I'm trying to do here, because I think this is again, you know, my son told me, I think it's been like this forever. I don't think that there's anything new about this. This goes back to the yellow journalism days. It goes back to, you know, the days when people would get the morning and afternoon newspapers and it's the kids on the corner, you know, shouting, whatever. It's the same as it's ever been, which is probably, possibly, maybe true. But I don't think it's ever been this bad. And I don't think those sources of news had the velocity to create this involuntary intoxication. And what does that mean? Well, here's what happens. People who are involuntarily intoxicated, that is, having an allergic reaction or a reaction to a drug, or under the influence of a drug that they don't know is a drug, will do things they think are right when they are diametrically wrong. They are diametrically opposed to their action. They will do things that a drunk person would do. Why would a drunk person get in a car and drive? Because they think they can drive, right? They're intoxicated. So this is what I mean. If we are suffering from mass involuntary intoxication at some level, then this is a portentous time, because as a nation, we are consistently making decisions we think are right but are diametrically wrong. And so that means when you hear something that you don't agree with, maybe it's right, and you have to pull back from the partisanship and pull back from the involuntary intoxication to say, no, I think I was right, and here's why. Or guess what? Maybe this guy is right, and I wasn't thinking that. Therefore, it's a dangerous time to be living in, because we're making decisions that are going to have reactions. So actions have reactions. We're going to make decisions today that are going to have significant reactions many decades from now. So the question is whether or not we really want to leave that up to Twitter feeds and social media and cable TV news. And I will leave it at that. Quick reminder, heating checks are going to be in vogue here as we get towards the end of August. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. If you're on the St. Paul side of the river, call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Four generations in St. Paul, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Well, I feel better, and I think that's the main thing. That's why I do these podcasts, to get this stuff off my chest. And maybe I will turn off the comments for a while on my Facebook page. Thanks for listening to podcast 853, Involuntary Intoxication, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
I had a date with a pretty ballerina. Her hair so brilliant that it hurt my eyes. I asked her for this dance and then she obliged me. Was I surprised? Yeah. Was I surprised? No, not at all. I called her yesterday, it should have been tomorrow. I could not keep the joy that was inside. I paid for her to tell me if she really loved me. Somewhere a mountain is moving.